Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
Wednesday on the Horn, turn the page. Wednesday over the hump, however you want to go. We're getting you through the midweek malaise and onward towards a big-time weekend, which includes the divisional playoffs in the NFL. Big-time playoff games. It is the Final Four in each conference. Winners will advance to the conference championship games, and of course the winners there will play in the Super Bowl. So we're getting to that point. Not a lot of riffraff hanging around. A lot of good teams, a lot of good quarterbacks. And interesting is we'll really dive in. A lot of Steve Sarkisian talk today, obviously, on, after his debut yesterday. But we will really drill down and spotlight the divisional playoff games tomorrow and Friday. But, you know, over in the AFC, it's about, it almost labeled it the young guns. You got all these young quarterbacks, Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, obviously Patrick Mahomes. These are the stars of the league of the future, current and future. And then over in the NFC, outside of Jared Goff, it's a bunch of aging all-time greats. The Hall of Famers, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. So young versus old, but equally compelling. Great games this weekend. So we'll dive into those. Also, the mess down in Houston continues to get messier, it's fair to say. Not just with James Harden, but with the Houston Texans. But before we get to the headlines and talk Coach Sark in his debut, let's welcome to the program after his busy morning, our buddy Bucky Godbolt. Buck, good morning.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good, man. How are you? How was the
good?
How was the airport today?
Not very crowded, I'll tell you that. It's not. It's like a ghost town in that airport today on a Wednesday. So it's really the airport at that time of the morning, which of course I would have been there 3 hours earlier than that. But it was kind of ghostly. It's kind of weird. We got to get all this stuff together because I don't know how places in the airport will survive. I don't know how the airlines will survive if this continues to go at this pace. It's just, you're so used to seeing, you know, four deep of cars letting people off. I mean, you got a space and then there's 100 yards before another car. It's sad. It really is sad. And just keep your fingers crossed and keep the prayers going that things will change and change quickly.
Well, and as you said, Buck, there's a lot of ways we used to do things that may never come back, right? The idea of a busy office building with people Zoom. You know, people are Zoom meetings. They're getting a lot of work done, sometimes even more productive, you know, coast to coast and all over the world, and they don't ever step foot in an office or on an airplane to fly there. So, yeah, hopefully, yeah, but there will be impact. We're already seeing it, obviously, almost a year into this, and it's as bad and difficult as it's been. Right now. But good to hear you. We've had a lot of good conversations. I want to talk to Quan Cosby earlier. It was Isaiah and I have been talking about Steve Sarkisian. Let's quickly, for our 8 o'clock audience, get the headlines, get everybody caught up on the news of the morning, because we know you cycle in and cycle out at different times. But trending topics on a Wednesday. Top Gun, Lawn Equipment Rentals bring you the news. And yes, Steve Sarkisian's arrival in Austin, the biggest story and top story. The Longhorns' new head coach, fresh off that national championship win against Alabama on Monday night. In his introductory news conference yesterday, which you heard live here on the Horn, the 46-year-old, who goes by pretty simple Coach Sark, said he's humbled by the opportunity to take over one of the marquee programs in America. Told his father 20 years ago, he said the story, it's the best job in America. He still believes that, but does insist it's the high bar he will set, and the work begins today.
I'm honored. I'm humbled to be the head football coach here. Our job is now to align the donors, the alumni, the ex-players, the current players, the recruits, and pushing everybody in the same direction to go achieve the greatness that we want to achieve. To Longhorn Nation, it's time to go to work. And clearly, you guys have probably seen my mantra, this work will be all gas and no brakes. We will go to it full-fledged. We will lay down on the hammer and go get it. But at the end of the day, to put on the burnt orange and white and to represent this great university and the great state of Texas is one I don't take lightly, and we will go for it to the highest level.
Coach Sark also said yesterday, immediate priorities, assembling the coaching staff, evaluating the current roster, and then hitting the recruiting trail before And by the way, before Sark even uttered a word yesterday at the press conference, he received his first major commitment and recruiting get when Louisville, Texas wide receiver Imani Winfield made his commitment to Texas official, choosing the Longhorns over offers from Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. The junior is one of the handful of recruits that Coach Sark contacted before that national title game on Monday night. Obviously had an impact. Also, he cited his current relationship with the current wide receivers coach, Andre Coleman, as giving Texas the advantage there. NFL, a lot of coaching and assistant coaching news told you yesterday, but was made official. Atlanta Falcons, former Atlanta Falcons head coach Dan Quinn is now the defensive coordinator in Dallas for head coach Mike McCarthy. Houston Texans have finally officially requested to interview Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy for its vacant head coaching position. They're going to have to wait, though, until the Chiefs' season is over now. He did his interviews last week during their bye week. Now, no more interviews until their season ends. Pete Carroll and the Seahawks moving on from offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. He's been fired. And the Bears and defensive coordinator Chuck Pagano, he is retired from that post. College hoops last night, big upset in the Big 12. Oklahoma State took down 6th-ranked Kansas, 75-70. Finished the game on an 8-0 run with the freshman Cade Cunningham leading the way with 18. Last night's big West Virginia-Baylor matchup in Waco postponed because of COVID issues with the Mountaineers. That's the 8th game this season. Number 2 Baylor has had to postpone or cancel due to COVID-19. NBA, Spurs top Oklahoma City 112-100 last night. Rockets got rolled for the second straight game by the Lakers 117-100.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass, 2020. Start 21 off right by renting or purchasing your equipment for home projects at Top Gun.
TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right, Buck. I've had my say this morning. What say you on what you heard and saw yesterday from Steve Sarkisian?
Yeah, it was refreshing to hear Sark talk about, you know, I think a couple of important things that he mentioned during the course of it. The fact that today is the most important day. That's a lot of inspirational stuff that he got through probably his time at AA meetings also. It's not about thinking about what happened to you yesterday and not worrying about what's going to happen to you tomorrow, but today is the most important day. That's a great message for his football players. We can't waste today. We're not going to worry about what we missed out on today. We're going to make today a very valuable day. And when he said that really caught my ear, that today is the most important day. Don't be worrying about tomorrow. Don't be worrying about what you didn't do the day before. What are you going to do today? And so that hit me right there. He talked about chasing greatness. He said all the right things. I mean, he talked about chasing greatness. That's not just you know, winning a bunch of games and having winning records. That's about winning championships and getting to the Final Four. Talked about putting in the work, which is going to be very important for this group of softies, as I call them. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to really have to put in the work. And that's his expectations, that you will put in the work to get the results. And that's exactly what he said after that. He says this is a results business. All the nice things that he says, all the way he says it, all the kind things he said about Texas, it's a results business. And I think with him, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get results because he is going to put in the work. He's going to make sure that the players put in the work. And I think that's what the players, that's what they desire when you play at this kind of level. You want to be the best you can be, and you want to be coached to the best you can be. And I think they have the right coach. And as I said, those things hit me, and a couple of things that he said. A lot of other stuff was coach speak.
Sure.
But that's what you're supposed to get in your first meeting. But it was positive. You know, that first impression I thought was really, really good. And there's one group that he didn't leave out. He said the word donors about 6 times.
Oh, yeah.
He did not leave them out. Because he understands what this business is at Texas. It's big business, and it's donor business, and it's money business. So he talked about the alums and, you know, the high school coaches and the players and the people around Texas. But the word donor came up about 6 times, which means, yeah, we're going to need your money, and I'm going to be out there helping to raise that money, and I'm going to do all the right things. So I enjoyed listening to him and listening to, you know, getting an opportunity when he got to sit down with Craig. So I think this is a good guy for the job. It's tough now because we all, you know, when we've been in this business now and been around coaching, which nobody on the station I don't think has been a coach before. So when people start saying they would love to have this guy or that guy, and, you know, my insiders tell me that guy is not a good coach and things like that. Sark didn't listen to anything we say. He could give a damn about what we say. His business is to pick the right people, the people that he's going to feel comfortable with. He doesn't care who we think is good for his fit or whatever else. So I think there's going to be a good mix. I think he's going to keep some good people that he feels comfortable with here. because he's going to have to understand what this place is all about. So, but I think he's got it. I think he gets it. And I like the results part of it. And once again, I like the most important day is today.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good lesson for all of us. What are you going to do today? Well, don't worry about thinking about what you're going to do tomorrow and what's down the line or what you screwed up the day before or what you did good the day before. Today is the most important day.
Well said. Bucky Godbolt joining and having the conversation. And look, that's, you know, whether he cares what we think or not, or say or not, after listening to him yesterday, I expect that you and I and he'll have a good relationship with the media. He will have a good relationship with people. And that's kind of my overriding theme is his authenticity and his ability to build genuine relationships. And because he's admitted he didn't used to be very good at that. But through the process that you just talked about, Buck, he genuinely cares and wants to know you. And he said that many times. And I think, you know, hopefully we can build a good rapport with him and have him on the show and all those kind of things. That obviously wasn't the case with the previous head coach, even though we started with the same idea. But to your point on the donors, I mean, I just see a really nice combination. It's something we've talked about since he's been hired, but now we heard it yesterday. He's got great job experience, Buck. I mean, he comes with a ton of job experience being around great coaches like Nick Saban and Pete Carroll and Lavelle Edwards. But he's also been a head coach, and he's a head coach at USC. I mean, you talk about donors and where donors care. I mean, Texas is always going to be number one in that, I think, but USC is not far behind, where you got rich guys that care a lot and rich people that care a lot and invest in the program. So he's already got that experience there and understands that, and that was pretty clear he understands it here. So you combine great job experience, a career experience, a humbling time, but also life experience, Buck. Those are two, he's only 46, so still a very young person. I say that because I'm 48, so I still consider myself a very young person.
Sure.
But the best days ahead, that's a good combination. Plus, he's a pretty brilliant football mind. Those are all great things. The ability to build relationships, bring your job experience and career path with your life experience, bring them together. And the thing I resonated most with me, Buck, was he kept going back to what's best for our players, what's best for our student athletes, what's best for them. And that's, you know, where that starts and ends. You as a coach, for 20 years, your lifeblood was those kids, those players, getting the most out of them. And that's when you invest there as a coach, that's going to be a good place to start.
Yeah, but they need to understand it's a two-way street.
Yep.
You're going to have to be coached hard because I don't know if they were coached hard or not, but you hear me, you know, the way I think about some of the players here and some of their thoughts. You're going to have to get used to being coached hard, and you can't whine and cry about it. And you know, then it's a hard sport. It's a hard sport unto itself. He's going to come in. He's going to understand the kids, but he's going to coach them hard, and that's what he wants. Like a coach, like you said, he's still a young coach. I mean, he's a young man to me. I'm 65, so he's a young dude to me, and I think he's a guy who's going to thrive here. He's going to thrive in the community. He's going to be a community guy. He's going to be. I think he's going to be similar to Mac. I don't think anybody can be Mac Brown.
No.
But I think when you pick up the newspaper or get on the computer and see what's in the newspaper, you're going to see that Sark is going to be out and about. You know, he's going to be that guy with his wife. They're going to be at benefits and doing things like that because that's a part of your community. And I think he's going to do great things for the community.
Mm.
Miss Edith, she's very, very big into people with addiction. I think he'll be involved with the coach's wife and her foundations and things like that where he can go actually talk about what's happened to him in his life. These are important things that make your it doesn't necessarily make your coach a great coach, but it makes him a community guy that people can trust and they want to hear from him.
Yeah, good
and
person.
Because there's a lot of people that have problems out there, and not everybody's a big donor and can afford that. But that guy can talk to anybody. I think we saw yesterday that he sounds like the kind of man that can. It doesn't matter what your status is or whatever. He's the kind of guy that you would. You know, if I were drinking, man, he'd be the kind of guy to sit down and want to talk to, having a beer and drinking with him and talking to him.
Yeah, well said. And Miss Edith being Edith Royal, the legendary coach's wife who is heavily involved in a lot of civic charities, including addiction, and that is a nice tie right there. And yeah, that's the thing, because somebody said, the wise guys on the text line, you guys said the same thing about Strong and Herman. Well, look, when we covered the press conferences of Mac Brown, you know, everyone was ready to go play for Mac Brown, and he had that immediate reaction and that visceral, hey, we like this guy. Charlie Strong, you good man, good person.
Yeah, I know Charlie Strong.
You've known Charlie.
I know him personally.
Yeah,
I've always liked him as a person. And
no, there's no.
As a good guy and a guy who really wanted the best. He wanted the best for Texas, but The Texans wasn't ready for Charlie Strong. I'm sorry. They weren't. They can talk about we're in 2000 whatever, but University of Texas wasn't ready for Charlie Strong to be the head coach there. They never had any real allies with him. I mean, and he also was a guy that thought, once again, that he could keep his head straight down into the table and do work and make it happen. You have to make allies here. You have to make a lot of friends here. You have to be big in this community. Plus, you got to be able to coach. Yeah. And he had some of his struggles when it came to coaching.
Right. Well, and
I didn't know Tom Herman enough to talk about what he was like off the field. I mean, I didn't know him well enough to do those to make thoughts about that. I knew Charlie personally, so.
Yeah, no question. And a great person, great man.
Yeah.
You liked being around him. Most people, I mean, think about when Charlie was let go. Remember the week before, I mean, you had 50 players show up in support for their coach. The players loved Charlie Strong, whether they were coached right and coached enough, and he had a good vision for the program. He, you know, cycled through his, you know, coordinators while he was here. And again, I don't think you're right. He didn't have allies above him, and that was a challenge, and were they ready for him? I do think he put his head down and felt like, look, if we win and I coach, we'll be fine.
Right.
But there's no doubt his players loved him. His players showed up for him. The Monday news conference when he was about to be let go after they lost to Kansas, and you know he had 50 players show up in support of him. You know, Tom Herman, obviously the opposite. Now, you haven't heard a lot of support from the players. And that's Tom's biggest failing was his relationship building at all levels for his locker room with his coaching staff and above. And you know that's why when things went to hell in a handbasket this October, there were no allies for him, and here we are.
Quan put it right. I mean, there are these kids never quit on Tom Herman, but they weren't going through a wall for him. Going through a wall means that you have to be mentally tough, not the physical stuff where you'd actually go through a wall, but mentally you don't make the same mistakes over and over and over again. That's going through the wall for somebody by listening to what they're trying to get to you. They didn't get the message, and maybe his message just wasn't good enough. Or, you know, like we said, I mean, I don't like bashing. It's enough time. You know, it's time to move on from him. But it's just the you know, you and I had talked about this, and I think it's true. He knew what he wanted to do. He just couldn't – he didn't know how to send that message out. He didn't know how to send it out. You know what I'm saying? He didn't know how to get that throughout the quarters to his men throughout the quarters. That's to his assistant coaches. When you're the general and you can't get it out through your sergeants and others to send that message that you want to give, and it doesn't get out the right way, sort of like the eyes of Texas, then it's no good. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
He wanted to, but he just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, he had the vision. There's no question.
Yeah.
I think he had the football IQ. And because if somebody else texted, how did Tom fail a relationship? Seems like all he talked about. Well, again, I think that's the genuine, authentic building of relationships that it takes to have people with you and trust you. And you, when you compare it to Mac Brown, and it sounds like you heard the Quan conversation, Buck. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Mac still texts Quan 10 years later. Sees how he's doing, middle of the day. That Mac is a genuinely good person who genuinely wants to know you.
And think about this, Eve. Mac Brown is someone that there are a lot of people that don't like Mac Brown.
Sure.
They just generally, you know, when we talk about him and talk about how wonderful relations, there are people that just can't stand Mac Brown and what he did with what they thought he did to this university and set them back.
Yeah, on his way out, for sure.
And that's growing, too. That's growing, but that's also growing for Mac Brown. Even at his age when he left here, after talking to Mac a couple of years later and spending some time with he and his wife, he knew what he did. He understood what he did. He was really sorry for how he handled himself at the end of this thing. And I don't know how long you can hold grudges. I mean, people can hold a grudge for a lifetime when it comes to their sports team. They just can't. I mean, I've seen you do it with the Texans and how they left and when they came back and all.
Yeah.
You can hold grudges against your team, but you know it takes a big person to say, okay, you know what, enough is enough. And I mean, and Mac eventually, when I talked to him, said, you know, that was, I just had talked to him. I said, dude, you know, you made a lot of money at Texas. You made a lot of friends. You made a lot of money. They paid you, Mac. They didn't. You weren't coaching for free. The criticism didn't come for free, and you did a lot of things for them. And it's kind of time that you kind of just said, you know what? You're right. I mean, what are you going to do? You got grandkids. What are you going to go to your grave with all that stuff on your mind? I mean, that doesn't work. I mean, I'm the worst in the world. That's one of my greatest faults is the fact that I can hold a grudge. I still have high school grudges from people in high school for things that they had said to me. In high school, it's hard to do when some of those things get deep down in your soul and you think they can go away. You have to work at that. You have to work at saying, I got to let it go. I got to let it go. And then you see that person, and it's 25 years later, and you hate that person. It's like, wow, how could you hate this person? You were in high school. So it takes a lot to forgive people about stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know, maybe the best thing for Texas football that, you know, we had Charlie Strong and Tom Herman over the last couple of years. Now maybe it'll be appreciated with a genuine guy. Now, but it's what he said. It's about results. So let's see how the results come.
Well, there are a lot of examples, obviously, and great thoughts there with Bucky joining the program and Will the rest of the way. And I'd also say, you know, if you look on social media or read the stories from the West Coast, I mean, the USC fans, you know, that story ended pretty ugly for Steve Sarkisian.
It certainly did.
As he went out. I mean, it was a public, you know, display of alcoholism that was really, really ugly. Donor events and booster events and practices. But they are genuinely happy for him that he's back. And, you know, that tells me that, yeah, he had issues. They knew it. It was ugly. It had to end. But they still like the guy. You know what I mean? They still like the guy because he is back, and they're not holding a grudge. The folks at USC, they're still mad that Clay Helton's still their head coach and they haven't made a change.
Yes, they are.
And they're kind of like, oh, man, good for Sark. And that's, to me, that says even as he was dealing with his issues, still a good person, still a genuine guy that people liked and, you know, wanted to be around. And it just wasn't the time. And that's all the way to now with look, Nick Saban doesn't say a lot. He says glowing things about Steve Sarkisian.
Certainly does.
That's genuine, and that's a good thing. This program needs it. They also need a good football coach who, as you said, will coach them tough, raise the bar, go to work every day, and demand greatness. So we'll talk more. Bucky, we'll continue with his thoughts. We'll hear from Steve Sarkisian. We've had many thoughts from Texters. Where can I hear the whole press conference? Because you had to work yesterday. Gosh, who has to work? But you couldn't hear it. Go to the website, hornfm.com. We've got it there, plus his full interview with Craig Way immediately after the press conference yesterday. Speaking of Craig, we'll have the Craig Way report coming up. Salacious Gossip, your Blitz. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
All my friends.
Salacious Gossip and your Blitz before the top of the hour. Remember, hornfm.com, your spot for all of our Longhorn intel, everything you need. Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference, conversation with Craig Way yesterday, and a lot of fun. Also, our sister website, FlexATX, FLXATX.com. It's recruiting, it's highlights, it's scores. It's where Austin talks high school sports and high school football. And good luck to the two teams still playing into the state championship round, Westlake and Cedar Park, this coming weekend. All the intel you need on all that. Plus, Flex ATX with a lot of high school basketball coverage. We'll do baseball, boys and girls basketball, by the way. Snoop and the team over there doing an incredible job. So we'll transition right from football after this weekend into basketball. Isaiah Collier, how are the Bowie Bulldogs doing? Bowie Bulldogs, your dad, Coach Collier, still coaching over there. Basketball season, you know, this whole football thing's really pushed all the way into the basketball season's been in full swing right now.
Yeah, they play tonight against Hayes. They've been kind of juggling the schedule around due to COVID.
Sure.
But, yeah, they're just trying to be playoff bounty.
Yeah, Bowie Bulldogs, Hayes Rebels tonight, or Hayes team formerly known as the Rebels. And I mentioned in the headlines, Buck, how about that? Just shuffling around for COVID. The Baylor Bears have already lost 8 games, postponed or canceled because of COVID, including last night's game with West Virginia, their game with Texas postponed. I mean, those will be made up at some point, I think. But that's the number 2 team in the country that is having a hard time playing games.
No, when this first started, I just said there's no way they're going to have high school football, and they'll be playing championships 6A this weekend, and I thought it would be a struggle for football in general to get it done. They got all the NFL games in, most of the colleges played, but I hope I'm wrong again, but I just see half of this basketball season being played. High schools are already in the thick of things, probably. They're getting probably closer to playoffs than anything, but for college basketball, when you're getting 3 games in your schedule postponed in a row already that you can't play 3 games and the 3 games coming up, I don't know how they get them all in. I think this is the real tough one. As I said, it's not as many players that you travel around with, but COVID is out there more than it was before too. And it can just, if it happens to one of your guys in basketball, you only got so many players. If it happens to 3 of them and a coach, it's, you know, they just kind of canceling stuff. I saw there was a team that won't play the next 3 basketball
game. And again,
that far out in front.
Yeah,
so it's
Yeah, it's tough. In the NBA, they're thinking about pause. They're thinking about maybe a league-wide pause just to get, because they're having to cancel and push so many games, which is going to push the schedule, you know, create havoc. Because, you know, one team hits COVID and they've got a problem. Well, they've got four games scheduled in the next 10 days. Well, that's the 10-day protocol. They can't play. I don't have enough roster players, and so there's talk if it continues to grow. But
they need March Madness or May Madness or April Madness or whatever it's going to be. They need that so desperately this year.
Well, and you know Shaka Smart and the Longhorns want March Madness because they're a team that can't wait to get back on the floor again. By the way, that's tonight for Texas. Texas will play Texas Tech at the Irwin Center, 8 o'clock tonight. You'll hear it right here on the Horn. Shaka and the Horns playing some really good basketball, obviously, fourth-ranked team in the country. So tonight, 8 o'clock, it's a late tip, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip here on the Horn tonight with Texas and Texas Tech. All right, Buck, so let's hear one more from Steve Sarkisian. I want your thoughts on, we talk about vision for the program. Well, you know, we know day-to-day, it's a day-to-day process. It's a brick-by-brick situation. As he says, all gas, no brakes, and put the throttle down and go. And you said that resonated with you when he talked about today is the most important day, and that's kind of an AA thing, which, you know, one day at a time. But every day needs to be a valuable day. Here is Sark on what he wants, the big picture of the program, vision moving forward.
I do know this. You know, I think one thing when you talk about Texas and I think of the University of Texas is this is not something you can do alone. We need a unified Longhorn Nation. It's going to take all of us collectively working in the same direction to achieve the goals that clearly we want to achieve. You know, the energy and excitement for our program right now, I think, is one that is directly effective to what's happening in recruiting. From the moment I got hired up until last night after the game and getting a commitment to the program already from an in-state player, I mean, that just tells you about, I think, where the excitement of Longhorn football is right now. And ultimately, our goal is to build a brand of football that everybody's proud of, that people can turn on games on TV, that come to DKR Memorial Stadium and say, that's my football team, and that's something I'm proud of, and I'm proud of the way they play. That they do things the right way, that they have a really good time doing it, that they're enjoying what they're getting to do, and ultimately competing for championships.
All right, there it is. There's the vision. And I'll say this again, Buck, and I want your thoughts. The timeline, the chronology of this couldn't have worked better for Texas. If you're going to make a coaching change, it's usually kind of a depressing thing. But, you know, for Texas to for Christo Conti to stall on any comment and, you know, make his one flimsy comment in December about, you know, Coach Herman, and then for them to go out and play as well as they did in the Alamo Bowl, to roll up, you know, 50 points and Bijan Robinson be unbelievable. Some young guys that are all going to be back, including Casey Thompson, play as well as they did in a just a destruction of Colorado. Then make the change and then announce the new coach who goes out and his team, you know, sets records and wins the national championship. That can create a lot of momentum. You know, that can create, hey, this there's some buzz here. There's a lot of talent. That guy is unbelievable with good players at coaching them up. I want to go play there. It does feel like here in mid-January that a lot more momentum here than you normally would get with a coaching change.
Yeah, I mean, it was all set up very well. I mean, they did it. I mean, Tom Bowl Herman even set that up pretty nicely because we know what Tom Bowl can do. But it's that game on Monday night, that sat with kids. Every football player in the nation watched that, sat there with their parents watching that football game. And they may not even had thoughts of going to Alabama or Ohio State, but they had thoughts of playing football. And the real, real good ones now have thoughts about, maybe I need to go where that guy is going. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is not a rush for him to get a defensive coordinator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He knows that is a hire. He's the offensive coordinator. So no matter who the line coach is or the wide receivers coach, he will run the offense. So he wants to get the defensive thing done the right way, whether it's an NFL guy or still an up-and-coming college guy or a friend of his or a neighbor of his. He knows how important that is. That's why I don't think there's no reason to rush to do that. But like you said, it fell right into everybody's feel-good lap, and it really did. Because if I'm a football player and I saw what went on Monday and I saw the wide receivers and I saw their third-string wide receiver, what he looked like, and the second-string, whatever it is, tight end, or the second-string offensive lineman, the way he played in a national championship game, I got to believe that guy has a part to do with how good they look too. So you want to go play for the best. You really do. And I think this guy can make all phases of the game really, really good. Because not only is he been, I mean, if you're an offensive mind like that, believe me, you know what defense is. You know what can hurt you offensively. So you know the kind of person you want to run your defense. You know if there's pressure on a quarterback who doesn't think like Matt Jones, who gets flustered in the pocket, you know he knows that. He'll know that kind of thing and talk about what kind of defense you need to run in this game versus this kind of guy. So I think he's that all-around coach, which is kind of cool. He's not just – I think we think of him as an offensive mind now, but I think we'll find out he's a pretty good defensive guy, too, and is going to help the defensive coordinator.
Well, think about his two chief mentors as coaches. They're both defensive guys, right? Pete Carroll and Nick Saban are both defensive coaches. Now, Lavelle Edwards at BYU, more of an offensive coach where he played. But, yeah, I mean, that you got to play defense to win. And, you know, he heard that from Nick and Pete Carroll, I'm sure, ad nauseum. So he'll be the offensive arm and getting that defense right. And also, look, I keep talking about relationships and good people. And here's what I'll say about Stark. I can also take that he told Nick Saban that the Texas deal wouldn't be a distraction, and clearly it wasn't. You know, he handled his business. That team was buttoned up. That team was ready to play. There was no, boy, you spent half your time talking to Texas and talking to recruits, and you didn't put the time in for this team. That didn't happen. He kept his word on that. And, you know, the Chris Ash thing with defensive coordinator, he was going to meet with Chris Ash either today or tomorrow face-to-face because he told Chris Ash from the jump that, I want to meet with you face-to-face. You and Oscar Giles and some of the other staff members, those who are not going to be back have already moved on. I mean, they've packed their bags and they're on. But he said he wanted to talk to Chris and Oscar, and he's honoring that. He's going to meet with them this week, and they have a real genuine chance to earn a spot. And, you know, to me that means something that hey, I don't, you know, I'm gonna, because the linebackers coach has already taken a new job. The defensive line coach Mark Hagan has already signed on at Purdue. The coaches who knew they were out have already gotten other gigs, but he did say, so I still think Chris Ash is in the realm because he's going to meet with him this week. And Oscar Giles has done a tremendous job with the defensive line, you know, Joseph Osai and these guys. So I think that speaks to Sark keeping his word with people, that he's, when, you know, he says something, he's going to do it.
You know, I'm going to be real interested from this point on, too, in Tom Herman's career and what he does and how he grows. It'll be interesting 3 years down the road to see where Tom Herman is. Is he a position coach? Is he a coordinator? Does he become a Northern Illinois head coach? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is he going to work for the Salukis? I mean, what's he going to do, be at Virginia Tech? That'll be interesting to see if he grows from this experience. Because, by the way, not many people at his age get an opportunity to experience like this.
No question. And we'll do that again next hour. But there's a direct parallel to what Steve Sarkisian talked about when he was 32 and took over the Washington job. You know, it was he's not sure how he pulled it off. He did it, but he learned a lot from it, and he's a different person now than he was then. You can draw that parallel. But Texas got up. I mean, when Steve Sarkisian took that Washington job, Buck, he was the big name. I mean, he was a hotshot Oakland Raiders quarterbacks coach, living the life. Pete Carroll, the USC success, that Trojan dynasty. And, you know, he kind of like Tom Herman. Tom Herman was with Urban Meyer, won a championship. You know, get to Houston, things come pretty good. You know, Tony Levine had left him a good program there. He built on it and got here, and, you know, he didn't really handle the tough things very well. When times got tough, it didn't go great for Tom. So you're right. He'll come out the other side and maybe be like Steve Sarkisian, climb his way back and have a part two, which I think we'd all root for, and we root for anybody on that front. But we'll talk about it, hear more from Sark. We will also hear from you. It is Blitz time, 447-3776, and Salacious Gossip, including Buck. It's an important date in history of if you flush the toilet today, okay? We'll get that. It's B&E on the Horn.
Where you get that from? Did Tawana tell you that? Did Tawana tell you that? Because I ain't for no games, okay?
No game, just the gossip ahead of your Blitz. Loaded up, 447-3776. It is only as good as you make it. That'd be the Blitz. We'll release the hounds here shortly. Bring it strong, 447-3776. Salacious Gossip, Buck. Did you hear the story on your way to the airport earlier about the Bitcoin guy?
Oh, my God, that poor guy.
I know. I've been worried about him ever since. I don't even know this fella.
Think he's had a hypnotist yet? Somebody that can hypnotize him?
That's a great idea. I knew you'd have a good idea on this, but we told you earlier, but maybe you missed it. Guy named Stephen Thomas. Stephen Thomas? I think it's Stephen. He lives in San Francisco. He was one of the he got in on the Bitcoin thing early, and he's got a digital wallet of Bitcoin with over 7,000 pieces of Bitcoin in it. Means it's worth around $234 million. But it's a heavily encrypted hard drive that the Bitcoin account is on. and he lost the password for the hard drive. Lost it, can't find it, doesn't know what it is, and he can't get into his account until he can find it. But the problem is, this is one of those super high security, permanently encrypted websites, or however they do it. It's in like your average password. And he's already tried eight attempts to get in. If he gets to the 10th and he's still unsuccessful, all of his $234 million, he'll be out of it forever, Buck. He'll never get, it'll be gone. He'll never get into it.
I'll just say this. I know this sounds crazy to people out there, because there's a lot of times I sound crazy. But if I had $23 million and I needed it inked, it would be inked on D's nuts. You know, I mean, does that sound bad? I mean, does it sound?
You would have tattooed the password on your body, including maybe your yeah. genital regions.
Yeah, I would have. I would have. $23 million dollars. They'd be right there.
No, it's 200. I don't know. No, get it right. It's $234 million.
Oh, I mean,
it's a lot more than 23.
Yeah, they would be right here on these nuts. I mean, they would be here. Now, I know they droop, and the numbers may get distorted by every time I get a little older, things kind of distort.
Saggy.
Yeah, you don't know if a 7 is a 1, or, you know what I'm saying, a 6 looks like an 8 after what I've been through. You know what I mean? I don't know, but I sure would put them somewhere that I remember. Inner thigh, butt cheek. I mean, it would have – how could you – how dumb is that?
How dumb is that, yeah. Yeah, there is no, hey, we'll send it to your email option, apparently. And he says he stays up at night. He just thinks about it, and he's trying to figure it out. He's got two more chances. He's got two more. He's got 9 and 10, and then that's it.
You know, when I would go to get bleached, you know what I'm saying? I would have them tattoo there on that.
You can just get it tattooed like on your inner side of your hand. You don't have to go down south, dude.
Oh, I don't. Okay. Well, they're working anyway. So
or you could write it down somewhere you can find it. You know, put
just
it
that simple.
Yeah.
I'm trying to have some fun.
Oh, that doesn't sound fun at all, by the way. All right. You know whose birthday it is today, Bucker? Would have had a birthday today? 1863. Guy named Thomas Crapper. Thomas Crapper. And if his name is Thomas Crapper, do you know what he invented and that debuted on this day?
I'm not
going to
believe that's
ago?
True. Come on.
What? The one-piece pedestal flushing toilet was invented by Thomas Crapper in 1863.
It ain't true. That guy's name can't be Crapper. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, right here. I'm reading it right
wow.
now. Reading it right now. This day in history. The Thomas Crapper invents the flush toilet in 1916. Actually, he was born on this day, but it was invented in 1916. So congratulations. Thank you, Mr. Crapper. We appreciate you on that. Hey, you spent some time in upstate Massachusetts, Boston area. Do you know the story of Lizzie Borden?
She got her head cut off.
No. She used an axe and murdered her parents.
Yeah. She cut. Yeah, she was the axe murderer.
1892 in Fall River, Mass.
I know where Fall River is, yeah.
Yeah, she axed her parents, and she found not guilty. But see, the axe is available. You want to buy, you can, the axe is going to auction. $2 million. $2 million if you want to buy the axe that Lizzie Borden murdered her parents with back in 1892.
I wouldn't buy that axe for $5. There's not a chance. There's no way I want that thing around.
Well, the guy with the Bitcoin would buy it if someone would give him...
Oh, my gosh.
His password, and then he would buy the axe just for you, I guess. Unbelievable. Hey, let's go to your Blitz.
The Bucky and E Blitz.
The Morning Blitz, brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty, in any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
I think I would shave the bottom of my dog and put those numbers where the dog is. I mean,
those are numbers. A car or something.
Yeah, that's true. Those are numbers I just couldn't give away. First Blitzer, you're up. Tavo, speaking of numbers, Tavo just got out of prison. Tavo, what's happening?
The Toro y el Blanco. Happy Wednesday, Toro. Hump day.
Hump day.
Hump somebody today. The Toro, check this out. So excited.
Oh. Tavo, let's go to the
Tavo?
Next.
Tavo, next Blitzer, you're up.
Game total, but check this out. So I got some good news for you and bad
okay.
news. So Wilco Sheriff Gleason has dismissed all of Roscoe Chody's staff. The bad news is, Toto, that they're all being hired in Hays County. Don't you want the Blanco live in Hays County?
I live in Hays County. Leave our county alone, will you? Next Blitzer, you're up.
Welcome to the AA meeting this morning, Bucky, Ricky, and Steve. Aaron, the king of beers cannot be the teacher today.
That's true. Jeez. That's true. Sorry. Bud Light.
Did he say Ricky? Did he throw Ricky in there? That's not right. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Yeah, I really like that new Coach Sharp guy. I want to take him out, and I want to buy him a beer.
Oh, come on, man.
So bad. I mean, really? Next Blitzer, you're up.
Everyone, pick up your sack and validate your password.
Absolutely. Just look. There it is. Whoop, there it is. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, I don't care if Sark doesn't win a game. He's already a winner to me. Did you see his wife? Ooh, wait.
Very nice.
She did not look. She had
the all-white suit on yesterday, the icy whites.
Sweet.
Yeah, she's
next
a lovely
Blitzer,
lady.
You're up.
Yeah, this is Tom Herman. Hey, Sark, when I go to the VIP room, my mantra is all ass, no breaks.
Oh, my God.
Oh! Shut it down!
Oh, no!
Let's go!
Oh, boy. Yes. I think we're probably going to get a lot of Tom Herman blitzing coming up with now for a while.
Well, I'll just get it out of the way here. I don't know that it matters because it will become a topic on the Blitz. But Steve Sarkisian's wife is Black Buck, and she's a lovely lady. Wore a white suit yesterday, and Zay was telling me it's going to help him on the recruiting trail. He thinks recruiting trail. I don't know.
Well, having a lovely wife of any color will help you on the recruiting trail.
Absolutely, absolutely. But she very very nice, and one of his rocks right now. I know I've talked to folks at Alabama that she is one of the people that's helped him get back and find his way and all the things that we've talked about with his redemption story. So good stuff right there. We'll be back.
Awesome.
We'll pick up the Steve Sarkisian conversation, other conversations, including, oh, no, just when you thought it couldn't get worse and uglier for the Houston Texans, Andre Johnson sent a tweet yesterday. B&E on the horn.